Hey guys, I'm joined here with Ramsey Paul.
Hey everyone. Hi Robert, how are you doing?
And so I want to congratulate you on your new show on HBO. It's called Hello Ladies.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I look just like that guy. A very handsome man, I must say. he's kind of a funny character, so I don't
so
know.
So he's not, it's not really you. But
yeah,
I thought it was. I turned on HBO and I thought it was you, and then it went in your website and some other people are saying it. So, but it's actually it's not the real Ramsey Paul. It's an impersonator.
I wish it was me. I'd make a lot more money doing that, right? So yeah, I would do that. So I've never watched the show. Someone sent me the link and I saw the YouTube video. And usually when people send me links, this happened before, they go, "Oh, Ramsey Paul, this just looks like you." And it's usually, you know what? Okay, some middle-aged guy with hair. They think. Looks like, you know?
Yeah, every middle-aged guy looks like Ramsey Paul.
Yeah, you know how that is. People usually do that. I'm like, yeah, I don't see it. But this guy really kind of did look like me. So, yeah, that was interesting. It was kind of fun.
Are you living his lifestyle of the character?
No. He's like this. I guess I've never watched the show, but I guess he's like some real geeky pickup artist type. I don't know. I just saw that one scene. So, no, I'm just a modest man doing my videos is all I do. So, but it looks like a fun show. I've never seen it.
So I guess what we can talk about is you have this video about Switzerland, and you've been like a staunch libertarian. And I mean, I was a libertarian at some point, but I was a libertarian several years ago. You've been a libertarian up until relatively recently, but the libertarian, they take kind of a view. They're staunchly opposed to any kind of government assistance, and they say everyone has to go out and get a job. And we're talking about the situation in Switzerland, which you can introduce, but that kind of thinking is not. It's not compatible with the current economic situation that we have when, due to things like automation through technology, the number of jobs are shrinking while the population is growing, and that's not sustainable. So you can introduce the subject situation in Switzerland where they're proposing a guaranteed income where basically every individual is guaranteed at least, I think it's at least $2,000 a month.
Yeah, something like that. But the amount is not the key thing. It's just kind of the concept, which I found interesting. And again, this is just like a petition and a referendum. It doesn't mean it's going to pass. And I love Switzerland, by the way. I did some work in Zurich. It's a beautiful nation. This really got me thinking, and actually I've been thinking about this whole issue earlier, is as you said, the libertarian model is, you know, you're responsible for yourself. I read all the Ayn Rand novels. I was a real big believer on that.
And the thing with that ideology is fine in a society that is agrarian, and agrarian society where everyone has like a small farm or business that's self-sufficient, but it's not compatible with the modern day economy.
Yeah, the concern I had was, and just to, you know, back up, I'm not a full-fledged, you know, socialist or communist now, thinking the government should run all the businesses. I don't. In fact, I believe in a lot of less government control. Having said that, though, the issue, and this was kind of more of a thought experiment, and I've kind of thought about it, and that's why I threw it out in the video, is the libertarian position really doesn't answer very well. What do you do if people are not able to sell their labor for jobs? And the libertarians, I've heard a good answer to that. I guess one answer is like, well, too bad, that's their problem. They can die, which doesn't seem reasonable.
Basically, I came up with this kind of description of Democrats and Republicans. It's kind of a joke. Democrats say that your jobs, you can basically – Democrats say you can get rid of all these like jobs, but at least the people who are unemployed, at least they can get welfare. Republicans are kind of like, get rid of all the jobs and let all those people like starve.
Yeah. So there's got to be a way to address this issue, because we're coming to the situation, I believe, just looking at technology. And there's another article, maybe I'll do a video on it, but they're predicting in the future, not very far in the future, 30-40% of all service jobs is going to be replaced by automation. And so you have kind of a thought experiment. This is a thought experiment for anyone listening. Let's say if we were in a society, we had the technical ability that we could have robots to do every job or basically every job. And I know the first thing people say, well, we're not there yet. They can't do it. I realize that, but this is a thought experiment. So just pretend that was the case. Then what would humans do? Would humans just, if you couldn't sell your labor, do you just die? This should be like a paradise because finally all these dirty jobs robots are doing these jobs people like, and we're still getting this wealth created. That's what wealth is, right? Things being made for us. Who cares if they're real human farmers, if there's robots are farming out there? That should be a great thing. Instead of doing the hard work, they're giving us the food. It should be a great society, but the libertarian position really doesn't have an answer for that other than, well, there always will be some jobs, which I agree. There always will. I'm not saying there'll ever be a situation where we never need humans, but I am saying based on technology and outsourcing of a lot of things, we'll need less humans to do the work. And the Democrats, their position tends to be, well, we just need to retrain people. We need to retrain people. So like all these factory workers and everything we're replacing, we're just going to retrain them to be Java programmers or something stupid like that. And first of all, not everyone can be retrained, but that assumes that there's all these Java program jobs out there, which simply isn't the case. There's some, but there's not that many. And so there's a fundamental problem that we have is what do we do with people if they can't sell their labor?
And the money, the libertarian argument against the welfare state is that there's not enough wealth to give to all those people. But if the wealth is being generated by the technology and automation of the economy, then those corporations that are doing that, they're making massive profits. So those profits should, instead of going to these billionaires, they should go to the people who are becoming economically obsolete.
Right. And remember, wealth isn't really money. Just think of it this way. Wealth is like I have a glass of wine in my hand, right? So that's some wealth because it's something I wanted to consume, or food's wealth, or cars are wealth, or watching a show on TV. That's entertainment. That's a type of wealth. And so how did we create wealth? Traditionally, that's been created by humans, right? And then we've improved the productivity by humans inventing tools and using tools. But we're getting to the point now we don't need as many humans in general to do that. We're still creating the wealth though. So, like say if you have a car factory, instead of having to employ 10,000 people, you only need 20 people to help maintain the robots. You're still generating the wealth, the cars. It's just a matter of how do the other people that aren't able to sell their labor get access to that wealth.
And then on top of that, the population is dramatically increasing too.
Right. Actually, in the most first world countries, if we had immigration control, that wouldn't really be the case. I know that's not the case, but let's say, and I'm also still a nationalist, so if we were
yeah,
like
that's
Japan.
Basically, like here in California, that's basically the reason why it's growing.
Right. If we didn't have, let's say, if we didn't have the 1965 Immigration Act and we protected our borders, the United States would not really be growing population-wise, just like most of Europe wouldn't be growing, or Japan isn't growing. So it's not really the issue with advanced countries growing. So it's more of the third world nations that's the case. So I don't see that as, as we're talking theoretical being an issue. I don't think growth should always be a problem. Everyone acts like that's a huge issue. I remember when I was in the 70s, everyone talked about the population explosion. That was terrible that, we're all growing the population. Now we have less people. Everyone thinks this is a problem. I think it's a good thing. I wouldn't mind if people just had one kid and have smaller humans on the planet. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. The problem is what type of people you have, how intelligent they are, how civilized, and what type
of
society you have.
Those are basically the people who choose to have smaller families because they're environmentally conscious, and it's good, which is a good thing, but they're actually reducing those kind of people.
Right. The people that tend to have smaller families are the people that have more self-control and they think ahead. They're like, I don't know if I could provide a family of five children. I would think that now, I couldn't give them everything they need. But if you have a low IQ and low impulse control, you don't care, right? I mean, what do you care? You just spread your seed everywhere. Didn't that football player in Minnesota, is a sad situation. His son died. He's 2 years old, Adrian Peterson or whatever. And then everyone's, acting like, oh, that's so sad. But he didn't act that sad. And they're trying to wonder why. He never met the kid. It's just one of his random women he impregnated. And so people like that, that really don't have much self-control, they have a lot of kids, but they really don't have family. So,
and that's one of the arguments that people who are opposed to the welfare state, that's one of the arguments that they make. Which is a legitimate argument.
Sure. I think you can't really have what I'm talking about and have open borders. but if you have a nationalist system, I think it is possible, and the societies can be quite nice. And it's not a binary solution. A lot of times even I got in that situation, you tend to think real black and white, kind of like Ayn Rand. You're either under a Soviet communist system or you're under a pure libertarian. There's like no in between. And that's, I think, a little simplistic. You can have a lot of things in between. For example, I would think this solution would free up a lot of things and get the government smaller, actually, because you wouldn't need things like food stamps or Section 8 or all sorts of welfare, right?
Yeah, everyone has their income. Of the budget for the welfare state, it actually, I think it could even be 80 to 90% is for the bureaucracy. It's not directly going to people. And this idea, it's called like a citizen's dividend or a negative income tax. Basically, the money just goes directly to the people.
Right. Oh, and by the way, we do this in the United States in some cases. Certain Indians, because of their reservations and with their casinos, and some of them get like millions a year just for nothing, just for being an Indian. And the people in Alaska, there's the Senate of Alaska, there's so much oil money. If you're a citizen of Alaska, and if you're a white person, surprisingly, you get like $3,000 or $4,000 a year just for being a citizen of the state. So that can happen. It's not like unprecedented. And if you did this for, let's say, everyone in the country, then you could eliminate all these welfare programs, shrink the size of the government, because you know you have your income, you got to manage it on your own, and it would I think free up a lot of things. Now, I'm not arguing that companies should be controlled by the government. In fact, this would actually free up companies to have less make work, because in a lot of ways we're already doing this. We're already providing for people through kind of what I call make work jobs. They're not really that important, or they're jobs that are created not just by the government, but even by government mandates for the corporation, say diversity mandates. So you have to hire a diversity coordinator. I'm sure such a lady would work hard, but that's really make work. It doesn't add any value or any wealth to the country. So this would reduce a lot of that. So I think there's a lot of merit to it.
But you pointed out when you were in Eastern Europe, you met with this you met with a nationalist, and this individual said that basically made the observation that capitalism and communism in a lot of ways are two sides of the same coin.
Yeah, I met with a few people there, and there was this comment this one girl made that she lived under communism and some capitalism, but there's a lot of, in a sense, similarities of how that can – if you don't really care about the people, and there's an argument for the old aristocracy that was actually like under Keynes sort of a better model because they cared about the people. Whereas under true capitalism, let's be honest, a true capitalist doesn't give a damn about Americans. If you can save a dollar by shipping the jobs overseas, that's your function. That's why you're hired by the corporation to do so. Yeah, it hurt your fellow Americans, but, you know, you're like, well, if I don't do it, someone else will do it. So sad, too bad, I'm going to do that. So you hurt the people. Whereas if you have a situation of a more of a nationalist system where people are concerned about the citizens and do what's good for the health of the citizens, you don't run into those issues. And because there's so much – all this technology should be a great thing. This should be allow us instead – why should we have a 40-hour standard work week? Why shouldn't it be like 20 or 10? And why shouldn't we provide a lot of women not have to work? Where instead of doing PowerPoint presentations for a stupid corporation that doesn't really give a damn, they can be raising their children. There's so many things that this would, I think, open up, and technology that could really improve our lives. I just think the system is really broken.
But there's an aspect of our culture. I mean, I think it goes back to the sort of Protestant work ethic. And you see them, especially among conservatives, where they very much fetishize hard work, as opposed to a culture, I think, among the aristocracy in Europe, they valued leisure.
Right,
it's a session with everyone has to work hard,
and hard and hard work itself, and let me use a analogy, doesn't really necessarily generate wealth. I don't think it's necessarily a good value per se. For example, I could hire someone to dig a hole every day and then fill it back up. That's what he does every hour, digs a hole and fills it back up. And he could work his butt off and sweat and be really conscientious and do that. And then I could have another guy that kind of goofs off all the time, but he's, let's say, actually inventing something or providing an important service. The guy that goofs off, even though he goofs off most of the time, he's providing some real wealth. Where the guy just digging a hole and filling it back up, even though he's a hard worker, he's not doing anything that provides any value. And I would rather have someone that does something very valuable. Back in my engineering days years ago in the 90s, one of the most brilliant men I worked with, he's as lazy as you can imagine, but he's so brilliant. And the things he was able to develop so quickly made up for like 20 or 30 people. And so it's not always just hard work is, I think, a good thing. It needs to be for something that's of value.
Yeah, I mean, it frees people up. It gives people free time so that they can pursue they can pursue their intellect, they can think about stuff, pursue whether it's political activism or some kind of a creative pursuit. As people who are constantly having to work to make money, a lot of times they don't have any time to really think about things, analyze things, or to pursue anything creative.
Right. And a lot of Republicans, I think they're, and I kind of fault them for this, and I suppose I was in this boat.
Well, they take a purely materialistic view of these issues.
Right, but sometimes they don't even realize that they're kind of welfare queens themselves or kings. And, you know, for example, let's say you have a traditional, say, black welfare queen. Yeah, I agree, that's bad. And, a Republican woman would, like, sneer at her, saying, oh, look at her, she's doing nothing, she's getting this money. And meanwhile, the Republican working, she's got a good job for Dow Chemical, and she's preparing her PowerPoint presentations because Dow has won a contract with a Department of Defense to create some new fighter to kill Muslims. That's irrelevant. We really don't need that. The girl, let's say Sally's her name, that's working hard at a corporation, let's say Dow Chemical, and creating PowerPoints. She may work hard and be very diligent, but she's doing nothing of value. And really, she's on welfare too, because the government's giving her money indirectly through these contracts of something that's not really needed, right? That's why we have all these big defense contracts. They tend to do part of the work in all different states in order to get votes. And they say it creates jobs, but those are make work jobs. Just as much make work as this, black lady on welfare. They're both welfare queens, really. One is just a little hidden more than the other.
Yeah, I mean, it's the economically. Bill Maher made that. Well, Bill Maher made that point yesterday on his show about Republicans, and he's totally spot on. But the focus about the poor welfare queens, I think. It is an issue because of the sheer numbers of people, but from a purely economic standpoint, it's basically what's happening is it's the wealthiest people that are looting the middle class.
Oh, yeah, and that's the thing, and everyone knows all these banksters that happened in 2008. They made all these millions. They made these risky investments, and then when the investments went bad, and pure capitalism, well, too bad. They should have lost their investments, but they cried and bitched to Congress, and we as the taxpayers bailed them out, and the minute they got bailed out, they didn't have the decency to wait like a month or two. They were giving each other $1 million bonuses on our money. So, I mean, how is that different than a welfare queen? And I know they probably look down at the welfare queens, but they're welfare queens themselves. They're no better. So there's a lot of that really goes on.
And the other concept, I don't know if you're familiar with, there's an idea called social credit. And the way social credit works is instead of the money, it's like a citizen's dividend, but instead of it coming from the tax revenue, it's basically the money that's introduced, that the government introduces, which they currently do towards the Federal Reserve, but the money would be introduced by going directly to the people, and that concept is called social credit.
Yeah, I mean, there might be interesting concepts out there, and I think that's what people really need to look at as ways to how we can really address it. I haven't really seen much Republicans or Democrats really talking about these issues. Again, Republicans tend to think, well, we just need to lower taxes. If we lower taxes, that's going to create more jobs. And I'm saying, well, not necessarily, and just maybe create more money that the businesses will create robots to do the job. And the Democrats to say, oh, we just need to retrain people. I'm like, yeah, retrain them to what? If there's no jobs, that's not going to do any good. So I think we need to look at this as a kind of a radically different way that I don't see being discussed at all in the mainstream by either the Republicans or the Democrats.
It's just the same with Obamacare. I mean, Democrats and Republicans support basically different versions of the same system. The way insurance historically, originally, insurance worked as a group of people, they got together and they pooled their resources, and those resources would go to pay for their health care. But now insurance companies are totally, it's basically a form of usury. They're all for profit. And Obamacare is totally usury on steroids.
Oh, yeah.
But the Republicans support the same system.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the insurance companies love this, right? I mean, it's great you have a product that you legally have to buy. And, boy, that's a sweet deal. That's why they lobbied for it. So, yeah, it's not in the interest of the people. It's in the interest of some of those insurance companies. So we just need to look at different ways, I think, to improve things. And, you know, that's what I explore in my videos, because I'm not tied into any political party or something. I can just talk about whatever. And so I found that kind of interesting, how we can go forward in the future.
And before we move on to some of your other topics, what else would you like to add specifically on this topic?
Well, I know a lot of people will bring up that, you're a Luddite. And for people that don't know what a Luddite is, that was an organization, I think it's a couple hundred years ago, that they were concerned, I think it was in England, actually, but they were concerned about the advances in farming technology, that it replaced all the farm workers, and they would all starve and die then. So they try to actually, destroy some of the technology. But what happened is the Industrial Revolution took place, so that all those people that were on the farms, they got into the factories and they did that. So now when you bring up these problems now, people say, oh, you're just a Luddite economist. And they would use that one example because it wasn't really an issue then. It turned out to be false because they were able to move into a different sector from farming into industrial. The modern people, economists, they always assume based on that one data point, that's the way it will always be, that, oh, well, that's okay. If factory jobs are replaced or whatever jobs are replaced, then everyone will go into the information technology. That was big a few years ago until all the program jobs disappeared. But that's not necessarily the case, in my opinion. It doesn't necessarily have to be the case. What happens if there's just simply not a need for much human labor? And that's something I haven't really heard a good explanation from a libertarian about what to do, besides, well, that's, their problem. They can die, which seems most of these people aren't going to just die easily. Or, there used to be some answer to that question, or they deny the question, saying that, oh, well, there always have a need for human jobs, which is true, and I don't dispute that, but there won't be a need for as many. And that's the issue.
And I think I do see you have this massive unemployment that keeps growing and growing, but I do predict a trend where people will try to create sort of a neo-Luddite communities where they return to things like agriculture. And I see that as a response to the current economy as not being sufficient.
Yeah, and I think that'd be unfortunate because I'm a big fan of technology. Hell, I'm doing this on Skype and I have my iPhone in front of me and looking at my camera up there. So I'm big on technology, and I think technology can improve us as humans. And I would like to see us go more and more technology. I think that's a great thing. I think it'd be a great thing if we didn't have to have anyone working in coal mines, that robots could do it all. What a horrible, nasty work. That'd be great. I think it'd be a great thing is to have back-breaking work out in the field. You could have robots do that, picking lettuce, instead of having humans have to do that type of work. I think that's a great thing for humanity. So the answer, in my opinion, is not get rid of technology, but use the wealth that technology creates to us and give it to us so we don't have to do without. We should all be getting richer and having more enjoyable lives. We shouldn't have to try to destroy technology.
And I agree with you completely, but we don't have – the thing is, it's not the majority of the people that have control over that technology. It's the people – who are using it for their own profits.
Right. And I don't blame them because that's what they're charged to do. If you're in charge of a company, you're not there to be a social engineer. You're there to maximize your profits. And if you have to lay off a lot of people to save a dollar, that's what you'll do because that's your job.
Yeah, I mean,
But that's why we need a government response.
human beings are kind of inherent, basically, so most people are selfish to agree.
Well, I could tell because I've talked to these people, so I'm not doing this theoretically, and I've talked to them privately, and they'll say, "Yeah, I don't like having to do this, but if I don't do this, someone else will do it, so I might as well do it." And my bonus is based on making these productivity targets. Yeah, I know it hurts a lot of Americans, but again, if I don't do it, someone else is going to do it, and hey, I get a big bonus out of it. That's how it happens.
So, what are, I guess, other than this topic, what video, the other videos that you've done, which one would you say is the most remarkable?
Oh, I don't know. I had my quite a few videos on my iPad when I was in Eastern Europe. That was a wonderful trip. Got to meet some of the nationalists in Hungary and look at their country. It was kind of depressing to me in a way, or happy, however you want to look at it, is kind of reminded me of how the United States was before we embraced immigration and diversity. It's just little things. I was walking down the street, saw a bunch of construction workers, and everyone is white. And then I was in downtown Budapest, and there's a little school group of probably, I would say, first graders, 6-year-olds, are all holding hands, probably 15, 20 of them. And this is like an inner city, right? And they're all white kids. So it was kind of a. And they're all Hungarian. Now they're all Hungarian. They all speak Hungarian, so they were really able to keep their culture, and that's what they're fighting for. Of course, the usual suspects are calling that hate, and they need to be enriched with like Somalis or whatever. And it'd be such a shame because they got such a nice country now and peaceful, and I felt very safe. So I hope they're able to maintain their nation.
Yeah, I mean, the ironic part is those countries, it's communism better preserved those countries than capitalism did in countries like England or Germany.
Yeah, I mean those countries are, but they're under attack now, in the same way that the West is. England, London's not even British anymore, so it's just really sad the ethnic cleansing that's going on in the rest of Europe. So these are some countries that are trying to resist that, and I wish them well because they have a right to, I think, like all people, to preserve their culture. And if this was happening in any other non-white country, it'd be considered genocide. But it's considered, because of white people, there is considered a thing to do. So, but it's a beautiful country. I really had a great time there. Hope to go back soon. Great people. So I did some videos there that were I really enjoyed just seeing how people were the same, however they were a little bit different than us. So it was interesting.
I guess one other video we could cover on your site. It's a different topic, but you saw that you posted that video from China.
Yeah, which video was that from China?
Have that woman beating up her boyfriend.
Oh, that's right, Hong Kong. Yeah,
Well,
yeah,
Hong
she was
Kong, yeah.
Chinese. Yeah, well, Hong Kong's China, but yeah, you're right. That was so sad. And a lot of those, when I see those, like, unfortunately, 80% of those type of videos are staged. Like, if you ever see those marriage proposal videos, a lot of them, people, they just want to get a lot of hits on YouTube or whatever, so they fake it. And I can usually see through it because the acting's bad. But this looked real, and it was real because she was arrested. But she was just slapping the heck out of her boyfriend. He was trying to beg forgiveness and everything. So it was so much for the submissive Asian mess. But yeah, it's like the way not to do things, trying to act groveling. Groveling never helps. It doesn't help in personal relationships, and it doesn't help politically. It just makes you look weak, and they take more advantage of you then. So, because what's and I
And
don't blame the
Ramsey,
girl.
your character, would your character in Hello Ladies, would he put up with that?
I don't know. I'd hope not. So that's pretty bad. So yeah, that's. Yeah, it's kind of a pathetic display, but you see stuff like that, and it doesn't always happen that bad. But you see a lot of issues like that that happen. And, you know, I did another video where this lady, and I know it was done tongue in cheek, but it was based on some truth in it too, where she gave her husband a sticker chart or whatever to do chores, and then he'd get a reward.
Oh, then you already saw that. Do you know this, site, Royce?
Yeah, but that it didn't really come from his site. It came from there's a lady that blogged that put it together, and I looked at her blog and stuff, and yeah, it was she was somewhat tongue in cheek, but that's something that's, you know, real. A lot of guys get honey-do list, and the dynamic really switches because instead of the man being the dominant one in the relationship, you actually have it inversed, and that tends to cause problems. So. Yeah, that was kind of an interesting video too of how that was, and I kind of tie that back to Breaking Bad. And Breaking Bad, did you see that series at all?
You know, I haven't seen it, but I know what it's about.
Oh, okay. I'd recommend it. I was like, because I don't watch much TV at all.
Because the guy in the movie, he's basically kind of like you. He's basically like an average middle class, middle aged white guy.
Well, basically, yeah, it's very, in effect, it's similar, but I mean, he hit 50 and then he got lung cancer. And then he basically, it was a story how he went mild and mannered, nice guy, and he kind of broke bad. That's the whole kind of story, kind of a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde type of thing. And so it's kind of interesting because when he started the series, he was kind of like that guy with a sticker chart. You know, his wife told him, oh, you know, we don't eat bacon with real meat because of cholesterol. And then she yelled at him, putting like a $12 charge on a credit card. And, you know, that's the life of a lot of guys out there. So I think they could relate to it. And then, you know, he ended up, no one's going to tell him stuff what to do because he just broke bad. And I think that's kind of in our souls of a lot of guys. And it's sort of, I think, a inherent struggle that we as men have between kind of the savage state that we were originally versus trying to be civilized. And we need to be civilized, but you don't want to be so civilized that you become so weak and you don't stand up for yourself. And I think that's kind of what makes that show interesting. And that's the struggle he always goes through in that show. It's a fictional show, but I think that's why it appeals to a lot of guys.
And I want to get your advice because I have a TV opportunity and I'm working on it. I want to put together a comedy series of comedy skits, but I don't really want to make it explicitly political, but I want to be at least somewhat subversive. But what's some advice from Ramsey Paul that you could give me?
That's great. I mean, it's fun. I think it's if you're on the right, we are the subversive people. So you can always be kind of like a modern day Norman Lear or whatever. That's what the left did.
But my actors, I mean, my actors are they're not they're probably on the left. But I don't. I'm just assuming that.
Are you the writer?
I'm basically the writer. I'm the producer.
Oh, well, the actors are – no offense to actors. They're monkeys, right? They do what they're told. So don't tell them I told them that. But that's, you know, they hit their mark and say their lines. So and they usually don't think too deeply. So
I want to be like Norman Lear. Norman Lear, he was someone. He was a bad guy, but he was brilliant. And he found a way to be subversive using humor. But
exactly.
Marketing like, his ideas to the mass audience, then that's basically what I want to do, but less explicitly political than what you're doing.
Yeah, he was brilliant that way. He was one of the major culture Marxists that really got it into American the psyche more
yeah,
so than
it's about humor. Nobody really wants to hear some like bitter cultural Marxist. College professor ranting on and on, but Norman Lear was talented and he was effective because he used humor.
Right, and I can still think of his characters. You know, Archie Bunker, an iconic character. You think of the ignorant kind of fat white guy that's prejudiced, right? So he made that character, right? Yeah, and I don't think he didn't. He was influenced, but you know, you have all those characters like One Day at a Time that you know advocated divorce, empowered woman. You had a MASH. Let's say Frank Burns. He's a character like you're just the idiot conservative, and that's how he would portray certain characters as and make fun of them. So we'd laugh at him, and that was
or
really
kind say, of. Or even with Al Bundy, for instance, Al Bundy kind of.
Yeah, And that's really what they do is, and that's one of the most effective ways to approach things is not with, you know, getting your face all red and getting screaming. It's just getting humor because people like humor and it's a way to get
everyone
point across.
Everyone likes humor. Everyone across all, well, maybe some people don't have a sense of humor, but basically most people, regardless of what your political affiliation or your ethnic background is, most people want to laugh.
Sure, and most people can laugh at themselves too. Like that's kind of the secret that even shows like All in the Family and MASH and all that in the 70s. It wasn't just flaming liberals that watched those shows. It was just middle America that watched it and they could laugh at it. And that's, it's a way you can kind of break a lot of barriers that way instead of taking everything so serious. And, I've always said that now, you know, the whole, nationalist movement in America has always been, you know, sadly.
He's an angry guy yeah. on the internet and he's ranting on and on.
Right.
This is so terrible. Blah, blah, blah.
Right. And, you know, that's their stereotype that they want people to be like. And, sadly, many of us have kind of, upheld that stereotype, and that's, we need to get away from that. We need to get away, you know, just being people that have fun, because we're the people that have fun now, right? It's the people on the left that always have a stick up there. You know what? We're out there. We're edgy. We're doing the things that they can't do because they're scared. They're scared of censorship and political correctness, but we're kind of like the radicals now. So it's kind of fun. It's kind of the inverse than it was like 30 years ago. So you can really run with that as long as you're kind of careful. Don't push the boundaries too far. What? And even Lear, he had to watch it. He could only push it too far at the time. And that's, you know, what you do. You just see how far you can push it and get away with the censors.
You know, are you familiar with this comedian, Lisa Lampanelli? She goes on, she insults her audience with all these like racial slurs, but then she says, "Oh, I support Obama and I'm into doing black guys, so it's okay that I call my audience all these racial slurs." And I mean, she's kind of obnoxious, but she can be funny too.
Yeah, I mean, George Carlin, he was a guy through huge humor, even though he started out real kind of a leftist, but he became more and more I don't know if you call him a conservative, but he says stuff that
he's a cynic. He's a cynic. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, yeah. He'd say the truth, and people laugh at it, you know, and yeah, because they could relate to what he was saying, even though it wasn't necessarily politically correct. So you can get a lot more through humor than you can by your.
Even some of the black comedians like Chris Rock. I mean, Chris Rock is hilarious.
Oh, sure, yeah, and he can talk about taboo subjects. It helps if you're black. If you're black, you're able to talk about, you can make fun of blacks easier and get by the censors than if you're white. But, there's still ways you can go about it. So, that's a very effective way. So I wish you luck with your TV show.
And I'll have, maybe I can hire Ramsey Paul to write some scripts.
Yeah, have me act in it. Tell you,
your name will be up there, written by Ramsey Paul.
Yeah, exactly. That'd be great. We break into Hollywood.
Well, I thought you were already in Hollywood. I mean, HBO is about as Hollywood as you can get.
Yeah. So
you got to do a parody of that on your site, Hello Ladies.
Maybe I will. Yeah, I think I will. I'll have to watch the show first, see really what's about. But yeah, I will. I could do that.
I guess one funny scene is he goes on a date and but he asks this girl out, but then he's really tall and thin. I mean, you're not as tall as he is, but then he knocks over this whole refrigerator of drinks and they fall over the place.
Yeah, I'm probably as tall as him. How tall is he?
Well, he's like 6'2". I don't know. He must be like 6'2".
Oh, I'm taller. Okay, I'm taller than him. I'm 6'4".
And he's English. He's English.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of like Ramsey Paul with a weird British accent. That's kind of, it's like, wow. So, yeah. So, yeah, no, I'll have to watch that. I could probably do a parody of that pretty good and make myself look like him. So, yeah.
Well, Ramsey Paul, I'd like to thank you for being on.
Hey, thanks. Always a lot of fun.
That's all we have for today's show. So take care and we'll be back with you next time.
Countercurrents Radio is the voice of Countercurrents Publishing and the North American New Right. Visit us at www.countercurrents.com. That's counter-currents.com.